live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. And I welcome everyone from all over the world. Today, we're going to learn about how green tea and apples both contain natural polyphenols and chemicals that are very good for our health. And I'll explain what those health benefits are. Also, antioxidants may reduce oxidative stress in men with prostate cancer, University of Connecticut and Louisiana State University. So we'll tell you about how to help your prostate stay healthy. Grapefruit supports healthy arteries from the French National Institute. We'll talk about that. And obesity in the United States, it's expensive. Just the Medicaid costs alone, just that one cost, $8 billion. How much does it cost people and their health? Well, try being overweight or being in a family or relationship with someone who's obese, and then you see the whole human cost. Also today, I'm going to be sharing commentaries. It's commentary day today, and I will allow time at the end for you to respond to the different commentaries. From Professor Henry Giroux from Truthout, Beyond Dystopian Visions in the Age of Neoliberal Authoritarianism. From Paul Craig Roberts, The Punishing Society. From William Astor, Tourist Empire. Also, I'll deal with a short one from John Caracalla, The CIA is an Ethics-Free Zone. And we also have an audio clip. It'll be interesting to see how many of you can associate the audio clip with the movie, and it ties in with authoritarianism. Let's begin. A long-established pattern of death decline has reversed. Why? Drugs, alcohol, and suicide. This is from Princeton University. I'll quote it. It says, and this is in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, despite advances in health care and quality of life, white, middle-aged Americans have seen overall death rates increase over the past 15 years, representing an overlooked epidemic with deaths comparable to the number of Americans who have died of AIDS. The results are published in a new paper in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And then the data goes on to talk about why. Well, it's drugs, alcohol, and suicide. And these are educated individuals. And it's a big increase. It rose 22% from the last educated group survey that they did. And it's a lot of dead people. You're dealing, in this case, with 96,000. So my thoughts on it, and I'd like your thoughts as well. Why are so many people who are educated, coming from a middle-class, upper-middle-class background, why are they drinking, taking drugs, and committing suicide? Happy people don't take drugs. Happy people don't drink. And you can say, well, that's not true. I mean, part of our social standard in the United States is to go someplace and have drinks with people. That may be what we're doing, but we're not doing that because we're happy or to find happiness. In point of fact, I'll give you a simple example. Take any of the popular beverages, gin, vodka, a bourbon, rye, any form of hard whiskey. Now drink it, and then take apple juice, orange juice, and coconut water. Which feels better in your mouth or afterwards? Do you ever notice how people make a face after they take hard beverages? There's nothing good that happens to the body. With the juices, natural juices, you help heal the body, you protect it. Antioxidants, phytonutrients. With alcohol, it universally destroys cells. And depending upon how much alcohol and the percentage of alcohol, it can destroy millions of cells per single drink. Now imagine that you're in college and you're binge drinking. You can die from it. In fact, people are dying on a regular basis from binge drinking in colleges, yet it's increased, not decreased. So if you're really happy, you don't need to sublimate. If you're not happy, you're going to find something to sublimate. And that's one of the reasons I believe is that people have gotten to a place in life where they're no longer in control of the circumstances of their life. Things that they had planned on, things they were happy with at one time, things that resonated with them, today are out of their control. My generation went a long way in trying to establish economic security. And for a lot of people, we did. The trouble is it ended up spoiling our children, or we spoiled our children, the X generation. And also, we spoiled ourselves. Instead of becoming communities, we became individuals living within communities, but not connected to them. As a result, it was every person for themselves, as you will see from a commentary I'll share with you a little later, that I have spent a lot of time thinking about. So what else? What causes people to do things that clearly are going to hurt them? Sooner or later, will there be a tipping? And why aren't we talking about this in our society? Why aren't we having open and honest discussions with many different points of view shared as to what are the problems and what, more importantly, could be the solutions to help people? I'd like to hear from you. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. But don't call in just yet. Hold your thoughts, because I think you'll have a lot more to think about to call in after my commentary. Now, good news for those of you who want to live a longer life. Some dietary studies, some good quality studies, have shown that people who eat the largest amounts of fruits and vegetables have a substantially reduced risk of developing chronic conditions like heart disease and cancer. Now researchers in this group found out exactly how that happens. They're called polyphenols. Now, this audience has heard me say polyphenols many times. When you eat an apple, you're getting polyphenols. Berries, polyphenols. But green tea, you get a lot of polyphenols. And those block signaling molecules called VEGFs, and which are can trigger atherosclerosis, or plaque buildup inside your arteries. And that leads to stroke or heart attack. And the atherosclerotic plaques and plaque rupture is a cause of death. So if it prevents that buildup, that's a good thing. And cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and mortality in Europe and the United States. Blood pressure elevated, cholesterol elevated, triglycerides elevated, all that's a part of it. So the answer is simple, inexpensive, easy. Nutrients can give you that. They can give you the antioxidants, but also eating grapes, drinking grape juice, you get them. Having lots of fruit or fruit concentrates, that'll give it to you. And using cells derived from human blood vessels, the researchers found that low concentrations of polyphenols from green tea and apples can inhibit the signaling. So even if you took not a lot, but you had some every day, you're still doing good. So make sure that you're having a glass of green tea or having an apple. Better still, have the skin of three or four apples. Go ahead and juice the rest of the apples so nothing's wasted. But this way, you're getting all the benefit. Also, a new study from the National Cancer Institute, I found this interesting. I'll quote it. It's published in the Journal of Clinical Oncology. Age at menopause and hormone therapy linked to BCC. Well, that's basal cell carcinoma. And that means that when a person is taking synthetic hormone replacement therapy, and most women do, about 10 million women every day take it, because it helps turn hot flashes off and helps prevent osteoporosis. That's fine. No problem there. But I could do that easily and have thousands of times by simply altering the diet, having more kale, sea vegetables, and green leafy vegetables, and sesame seeds and tahini, that gives your calcium, magnesium, and remineralizes your bones. Vitex and blue cohosh will help prevent hot flashes. But there's no side effects. Here's the rub. The side effect of synthetic hormone replacement therapy at menopause is breast cancer, ovarian cancer, heart attack, stroke, dementia, and colorectal cancer. And now this study shows that it's basal cell carcinoma also. Just one more negative to put in there. And there's no need for this at all when we can turn off the hot flashes, help a woman through menopause with virtually no problems, reverse the problems that exist now, like thinning of the skin and falling out of hair. Another good study, this is from five different universities, including South Carolina, California, North Carolina, Louisiana State, and University of Connecticut. They found that the higher the amount of antioxidants, vitamin E, vitamin C, that you're taking in, the less oxidative stress in men with prostate cancer. Now, one of the reasons you get prostate cancer is because of oxidative stress. So something that would help you if you have prostate cancer means also, by extension, it would help prevent prostate cancer. So my suggestion is this. For all men, every man over the age of 35, I suggest you make sure that you have 1,000 milligrams of buffered vitamin C 5 times a day, minimum. And if you're under a lot of stress, if you're working in a polluted environment, increase it up to bowel tolerance, then back it back. Also, vitamin E 2 times a day, 400 units with tocotrienols, and coenzyme Q10, 1 to 200 milligrams 2 times a day, and cayenne at high heat unit 2 times a day, and that will help protect your prostate so that there's no reason to have an enlarged prostate, no reason to have an inflamed prostate or cancer of the prostate. And also grapefruits, in this study from the French National Institute of Agriculture, published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, help support healthy arteries. And we need healthy arteries. You never see your arteries. You can't feel your arteries. But every time you eat a French fry, a potato chip, a pretzel, every time you eat anything that's been browned, such as in a carbohydrate, a pastry, toast, a pizza crust, every time you have meat in any form, when it's cooked, it's browned. And in the browning process, you create age-related molecules. And these age-related molecules, both in the baked goods that are browned and in the meat, these heterocyclic amines and acrylamides, these speed up the aging process, but also of your arteries. And then they cause little nicks and tears, and little scabs to be formed. And one day, maybe 30 years after eating food you shouldn't have, you have a blockage. You don't know you have a blockage until you have a heart attack or stroke. So this is where a simple fruit like grapefruit could make a difference. Quote, want to hydrate your way towards a healthier heart? Then you may want to consider adding grapefruit juice to your diet. Why? Because a recent study found that grapefruit juice enriched with the bioflavonoid nerogenin actually improved a marker associated with arterial function. Previous research shows citrus bioflavonoids support blood vessel function. They strengthen blood vessel walls, decrease bruising, prevent bleeding of the blood vessels, heal hemorrhaging. And by the way, very good if you have a hemorrhoid, because it will also take the swelling out of the veins and allow the body to reabsorb the blood that's in the hemorrhoid. And all a hemorrhoid is engorgement of blood into a vessel that has so much engorgement and so much stress on the muscle, the sphincter muscle, that it pushes it outside the body. But you can have internal hemorrhoids and external hemorrhoids. And they'll go away in about 4 weeks if you simply relax and breathe deeply when you're sitting. Best to do it in Japanese style. You're getting a more correct posture for vacating. And to breathe deeply and don't stress, don't hold your breath, don't squeeze, and also have lots of water, but also have lots of antioxidants, including grapefruit juice, and that can help that. So this study shows that the bioflavonoids, 2,000 milligrams a day if you have hemorrhoids, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, can help reduce hemorrhoids tremendously. And we're finding a lot of postmenopausal women have problems with hemorrhoids, and they were given grapefruit juice, and they drank it for 6 months, and it made a big difference in helping them have healthier arteries and reduce arterial stiffness that leads to cardiovascular disease. So that's the latest on health and healing. Also, want to share some thoughts with you now that I believe are important. This comes from Professor Paul Craig Roberts. Here's what he says. Punishment has become a primary feature of America, indeed of Western society. A baker in Colorado was punished because he would not bake a wedding cake for a group. A county or state clerk was punished because they would not issue a marriage license, which, by the way, I disagree with that. I believe they should have. University professors are punished because they criminalize Israel's inhumane treatment of Palestinians. Whistleblowers are punished, despite their protection under federal law, for revealing crimes of U.S. government. And children are punished for being children, but not by their parents. Police can slam children around and seriously injure them, but parents may not lay a hand on a child. If a child gets spanked, as everyone in my generation was, in comes Child Protective Services, the child is seized, put into protective custody, and the parents are arrested. Child Protective Services receives federal bonus for every child they seize, and they want the money. About all parents can do today is to restrict TV or video game playing time. Even this is dicey because the kids are taught in school to report abusive behavior of parents. For many kids, being told what to do by parents is abusive behavior. Kids have learned that they can pay back parents for disciplining them by reporting the parents to teachers or by themselves calling Child Protective Services. Kids who retaliate in this socially approved manner do not realize that they run a high risk of ruining the lives of their parents as well as their own by ending up in foster care where the risk of sexual abuse is present. As society has made it possible for kids to prevail over parents, the kids think this right also applies to teachers, school administrators, and school resource officers, psychopaths with badges who maintain discipline with force and violence. The kids quickly discover, as Shakira discovered in her encounter with Ben Fields, that whereas parents are constrained from using corporal punishment, school resource officers are not. Shakira's desk was overturned, as she said in it. She was slammed onto the floor, dragged across the floor, and handcuffed. Any parent who did that would be facing jail time. Schools are no longer places of learning. They are places of punishment. Kids are punished for the most absurd reasons. Nothing more than behaving as a child brings on punishment. As Henry Giroux has written, schools have become places of control, repression, and punishment. 17,000 American public schools have a police presence. All common sense has been departed. 5- and 6-year-olds who get into a shoving match are arrested and carried off in handcuffs. Police issue tickets and fines to students for what was ordinary behavior in my school days. Suspensions result, as do police records, that hamper a child's prospect of success. The violence that Ben Fields used against Shakira is routine. Mother Jones reports that a Louisville goon punched a 13-year-old girl in the face for cutting into the cafeteria line. And another 13-year-old was put into a chokehold until they went unconscious. A dispute over a cell phone use resulted in a Houston student being hit 18 times with a police weapon. the police violence extends beyond the schools. Any American unfortunate enough to have a police encounter risks being tasered, beaten, arrested, even murdered. Protesters, war, and others otherwise are beaten, tear-gassed, and arrested. The American police state is working hard to criminalize all criticism of itself. Violence has become the defining hallmark of the United States. It is even the basis of U.S. foreign policy. In the 21st century, millions of people have been killed and displaced by America's violence against the world. With our public schools and police forces working overtime to teach the children who will comprise the future generations that violence is the solution and submission is the only alternative, expect the United States to be unlivable at home and even worse for the rest of the world, end quote. A couple of my own thoughts. I'd like to hear yours. First, it is always dangerous to deal in such broad-based generalities. What we do not hear are all the police, and there are many, who would never think of using abuse, but rather would and have repeatedly throughout their careers, and I know such officers, who try to understand what it is to be the person that they're trying to protect or help. They also have children. The idea that every cop in every school is somehow a manifestation of an authoritarian figure that will not hesitate to arrest or punish a person is simply not the case. We hear of the cases, and that is bad. Not bad that we hear of it, but that any child has been arrested or abused for stepping in line in front of someone else or not turning off their cell phone. There are ways within the school and within the family in the school to address these issues. I'm opposed to corporal punishment. I do not believe that it teaches the right lesson. I believe that we have to be much more loving but disciplined in showing the consequences of acting out and acting inappropriately. Also, and I have posted many such of police brutalizing individuals, the fact that we have these recorded shows that historically what would have been denied. So what we have is we have a problem on both sides. On the one side, we have too many police willing not to challenge those in their ranks for the wrongs they have done, for their biases and prejudices and their racial views, and for their sociopathic tendencies. And when you stay silent and know that this exists and that these people will hurt other people, then on a moral level, you bear some responsibility. But we also have police who have stood up and called out people in their own ranks who were doing wrong to society. And frequently those people have had their careers ruined, but they are true heroes for doing it, in my opinion. On the other hand, I believe it is wrong to look at all authoritarian figures as if somehow they are the enemy. They are not. And if you ever have something happen in your life, which I hope does not happen, where you require police to come to your aid, then you will appreciate how important the role of the police are in our society, at least those police who have understood what it is to serve and protect. And they still exist, and they should not all be lumped together, in my opinion. Now something that goes a little deeper. Something I feel strongly about, and I'm going to play you an audio clip in a moment to remind you of this. I have done a great many programs, more often than not, very scholarly programs with a lot of research, and people who are scholars in their field talking about how America has become a totalitarian country. We are a police state today. However, that does not represent everyone's experience. It depends upon where you're at in society, what level of society, where you live, the context and content of your life. If you live where I'm broadcasting from in Manhattan, in our studios, you won't see crime very often or at all. You could go your whole life never see crime. You live on the Upper West Side. It's one of the most prosperous areas of the world. So many educated people, artists, educators from Columbia, and Teachers College and Goddard, and Union Seminary, and wonderful boutiques and libraries and stores and social events and Central Park and all the people who prosper living in that area. You may never know suffering exists as long as you stayed within that area. But there are also about 5,000 areas of affluence in the United States where as long as you stay there, you don't see the rest of the world or the suffering. But the harsh reality is that we are not a society. We have at least 9 clearly defined societies, from the uber-rich, those who have more than $1 billion, and the super-rich, those who have more than $500 million, those who are trying to be richer, who have $100 million or more, those who are stressed to the max because whatever they have, they always seem to be less than the person ahead of them and trying harder to have more things and possessions, and those are the people who have from 10 million on. Taken together, you're dealing with over 8 million individuals. With an average of 4 people per family, that's over 30 million Americans who do not have to worry about their futures financially, or they're going to vacation, or can they afford the meal, or paying their credit cards. They don't have to worry about the medicines they need or not need. These individuals do not have to concern themselves with paying a mortgage or rent or how they're going to get from point A to point B. They don't use public transportation. These are people who are living as if this was a new gilded age. But then you have a professional class right behind them, about 6 million architects, engineers, professors, people who are guaranteed a certain lifestyle, frequently having subsidies, like at Columbia University, they help subsidize your rent, and New York University and other universities as well. And scientists working for over 200,000 private contractors that live forever on our tax dollars with very little good coming from it, but they make themselves seem essential. And as long as you look essential, it does not matter if you are essential. It doesn't matter if you know anything to be present, as long as you look presidential. Absurd? Absolutely. Inane? Yes. But appearances become our reality. Illusion becomes how we define ourselves. And then you look at those people who are modest in their expenses, conservative in their economics, and they live a particular existence where they don't take a lot of chances. A lot of them live in gated communities. We have over 20 million people living in gated communities. So when you add all this up, you're dealing with over 65 to 70 million Americans who are okay. But in a country of 328 million people, you still have over 250 million people, two-thirds of the population, who are suffering. And it's their suffering, their plight, that we don't pay attention to. They're the ones filling our prisons, not the wealthy people from Wall Street. It's these people who struggle every day. So how did we get here? How did we get to where we're no longer a community? We no longer care about each other. We no longer are looking at how we have a form of inverted totalitarianism, as Professor Rowland said. How do we become a fascistic state, militarizing our police, without it being in the average person's consciousness? George Orwell's nightmarish vision of a totalitarian society casts a dark shadow over the United States. As American society has moved from a welfare to a warfare state, the institutions that were once meant to further justice and limit human suffering and misfortune and protect the public from the excesses of the market have either been weakened or abolished. Now, Henry Giroux has some specific insights on this. He says, quote, "With a withering, if not evisceration, of the social contract, the discourse of social responsibility has been removed from the principles of democratic reform." He is right. And any objective person would sit back and say, I agree. Disdained by right-wing extremists, democratic principles are withering under the social order marked by a growing lawlessness, a hardening of the culture, and the emergence of an unprecedented survival of the fittest ethos. This is a mean-spirited ethos that rails against any notion of solidarity and compassion and empathy that embraces a respect for others. And it's not just in the wealthy, it's also at all levels. Have you heard me mention it all? When traveling for 5 years, filming as much as 3 months a year, I saw people who had 2,000 to 3,000 people living in a community, and as many as 40% of the homes have been repossessed. When I asked the people, did you know that person? Yeah, I knew that person. For how long? 10, 20 years? Did you know they were in trouble financially? Yeah, I heard they lost a job. Did you ever go over and say, friend, can I help you? Can I do something to lessen your suffering? No. Why not? Well, I didn't think it was my responsibility or my obligation. That is what I'm talking about. That is the assault that I'm seeing, the assault against the spiritual within us. We become hardened. We become living in an existential, emotional wilderness. Cynicism becomes our joy. After a decade and a half of war abroad, the war has come home, mobilized through a culture of fear, surveillance, and violence. And if you doubt me, for those of you who live in gated communities, those of you who live in Darien, Connecticut, or beautiful estates, every phone call you make is listened to. The entire content is taken. Psychologists and behavioralists study what you watch on the internet. If you watch porn, they want to know what kind of porn, what your fetishes are. They're creating blackmail profiles. Every single thing you've done, they now have a record of. But because they didn't come and knock down your door, or you feel that you're powerful in your community, you're wealthy, you're respected, you have a certain celebrity status, that somehow you're immune from this, indeed you are, for the time being, but not forever. As David Packer has observed, violence has become inseparable from justice and lawlessness, and now defines the commanding political, military, and economic institutions of the United States. The very idea of violence has metamorphosed into a solution for addressing social problems. For instance, as everyday behavior is criminalized, school children are assaulted by security personnel, some are, not all, black youth are killed by the police for making eye contact, and under the pretext of a war on terror, the distinction between civilians and combatants is blurred. Public spheres, once considered safe spaces, have been transformed into war zones, turning poor urban schools into prisons, cities into training grounds for paramilitarized police forces, and airports into sites of intensive surveillance and security. You might walk past a police officer, outfitted with a tactical gear on, holding an assault rifle, or drive past a police cruiser, scanning license plates. There might be a surveillance camera on the street corner tracking your movements. At the airport, you may be put through your paces by government agents who will want to either pat you down or run scans of your body. And each time you make a call or send a text message, your communications will absolutely, positively be logged and filed. When you return home, you might find that government agents have been questioning your neighbors about you as part of a census questionnaire, but it is not. After you retire to sleep at night, you might find yourself awakened by a SWAT team crashing through your door. You'll later discover they were at the wrong address. And if you make the mistake of reaching for your eyeglasses, well, count yourself shot. The basic elements of this new neoliberal authoritarianism can also be seen in the ongoing and ruthless assault on the social state, unions, higher education, workers, students, poor minority youth, and any vestige of the social contract. Free market policies, values, and practices with their emphasis upon the privatization of everything. Every public wealth, the elimination of social protections, and the deregulation of economic activity now shape practically every commanding political and economic institution in both the city and the country. Markets now use their economic and ideological resources to weaponize and militarize all aspects of everyday life. This militarized status quo is increasingly held in place by a culture of fear, of repression, a banal celebrity culture, game show aesthetics, and a politics of precarity, control, and mass surveillance. A world of shadows, of secrecy, of lawlessness now characterizes a deep state that is ruthless in its pursuit of wealth and power and indifferent to its plundering of both humanity and the planet. And it lies through its media that it controls. What does it control? It controls everything on fascist Fox Network, CNN, NPR, PBS, the major networks. All of it they control. If you doubt me, show me the person that got authorization to do an intelligent, well-researched program on the truth of 9/11, including bringing members of the actual commission on, who to this day say that the commission's findings showed serious flaws. You won't, because there's no one going to allow it. In fact, when was the last time you saw a program that told the truth about the dangers of GMOs and the lack of authentic science supporting it and the colonization of corporate trolls, of legions of bureaucrats, mindless, numbed mindless, and sharp as attack, ruthless, capricious, sociopathic technocrats heading every governmental agency? Show me the program that exposed it. I'd like to know where it exists. We live at a time when politics is nation-based and power is global. Global markets now trump the national rendering of the political culture. The financial elite now float beyond national borders and no longer care about the welfare state, the common good, or for that matter, any institution not subordinated to the dictates of finance capitalism. Hence, the ruling elites make no concessions in their pursuits of power and profit. The only concession you will ever hear anyone in power make is to that of the truth. They will try to tell you the truth by telling you what they believe you want to hear, only to subvert it instantly. And yet we continue to believe them. Then where is the problem? We who refuse to see the truth even when it's self-evident, or they in this kabuki of I'll tell you what you want to know, but then don't hold me accountable for never doing it. And hence, those of you who vote Democrat or vote Republican, instead of voting intelligently and making a vote sacred and count for a third party that cares about people, then you might as well resubscribe to The Nation magazine or Mother Jones or watch NPR or MSNBC. If that's the level of your truth, then you're bathing in awful shallow water, my friend. Deregulation, privatization, commodification, and the unimpeded flow of capital now drive politics and concentrate power in the hands of about 5%. Forget 1%, it doesn't exist. 5% does. And 5% of the people have all the power. Class warfare has merged with neoconservative policies to engage in permanent warfare, both abroad and at home. There are no safe places free from the rich hoarders of capital and the tentacles of the surveillance and punishment state. The basic imperatives of casino capitalism, extending from eliminating corporate taxes and shifting wealth from the public to the private sector, to dismantling corporate regulations and insisting that markets should govern all of social life, have become the new common sense. Any viable notion of the social solidarity and shared democratic values are now viewed as a pathology, replaced by a survival of the fittest ethic, the celebration of self-interest, and a notion of the good life entirely tied to a vapid consumerist elite. So with the return of the new Gilded Age, not only are democratic institutions, values, and social protections at risk in many countries, but the civic and formative cultures that make them central to democratic life are in danger of disappearing altogether. Poverty, joblessness, low-wage work, and the threat of state-sanctioned violence produce among many populations the ongoing fear of a life of perpetual misery and of ongoing struggle simply to survive. Do you know what it means to survive? Do you have any idea how many people no longer feel there's any reason to try to survive because the level that they are surviving at is one that does not provide them with any hope that there will be a better day ahead of them? One more reason for suicide, in young and old. And hence, anyone who challenges it, quickly, that dissent is dampened. And there is an ethical tranquilization fed daily by the mobilization of moral panics or the pseudo-faux spiritualist who come forward who say, think the positive thought, put it in the universe, and it'll all come back to you. The Oprah Winfrey gang. Sorry, friends, it just doesn't work. Oh, except to make her a billionaire, then it did. To you, not so much. Underlying the rise of the authoritarian state and the forces that hide in the shadows is a politics indebted to promoting historical and social amnesia. The new authoritarianism is strongly indebted to what Orwell once called a protective stupidity that negates political life and divests language of its critical content. Neoliberal authoritarianism has changed the language of politics and everyday life through the malicious public power need that turns reason on its head and normalizes a culture of fear, war, and surveillance and exploitation. That is, the heavy hand of Orwellian control is evident in those dominant cultural apparatuses that extend from schools to print to audio to screen cultures, which now serve as disimagination machines attacking any critical notion of politic that makes a claim to be educated in its attempt to enable the conditions for changing. I'm Gary Nall. Now listen to this.
For God's sake, don't touch it. Dad, what's wrong with the telly?
Good evening, London. Allow me first to apologize for
the emergency channel.
I do, like many of you, appreciate the comforts of the everyday routine, the security of the familiar, the tranquility, repetition.
Bloody hell.
I enjoy them as much as any bloke. But in the spirit of commemoration, whereby those important events of the past, usually associated with someone's death or the end of some awful bloody struggle, are celebrated with a nice holiday, I thought we could mark this November the 5th, a day that is sadly no longer remembered, by taking some time out of our daily lives to sit down and have a little chat. There are, of course, those who do not want us to speak.
Let me think, just let me think.
I suspect even now orders are being shouted into telephones and men with guns will soon be on their way.
It's Chancellor Sutler.
Damn it!
Why? Because while the truncheon may be used in lieu of conversation, words will always retain their power. Words offer the means to meaning, and for those who will listen, the enunciation of truth. And the truth is, there is something terribly wrong with this country, isn't there?
You designed it, sir. You wanted it foolproof. You told me every television in London.
Cruelty and injustice, intolerance and oppression. And where once you had the freedom to object, to think and speak as you saw fit, you now have sensors and systems of surveillance coercing your conformity and soliciting your submission.
We need cameras.
How did this happen? Who's to blame? Well, certainly there are those who are more responsible than others, and they will be held accountable. But again, truth be told, if you're looking for the guilty, you need only look into a mirror. I know why you did it. I know you were afraid. Who wouldn't be? War, terror, disease. There were a myriad of problems which conspired to corrupt your reason and rob you of your common sense. Fear got the best of you, and in your panic you turned to the now High Chancellor, Adam Sutler. He promised you order, he promised you peace, and all he demanded in return was your silent, obedient consent.
Inspector, you're almost through.
Last night, I sought to end that silence. Last night, I destroyed the Old Bailey to remind this country of what it has forgotten.
More than 400 years ago, a great citizen wished to embed the 5th of November forever in our memory. His hope was to remind the world that fairness, justice, and freedom are more than words. They are perspectives. So if you've seen nothing, if the crimes of this government remain unknown to you, then I would suggest that you allow the 5th of November to pass unmarked. But if you see what I see, if you feel as I feel, and if you would seek as I seek, then I ask you to stand beside me one year from tonight, outside the gates of Parliament, and together we shall give them a 5th of November that shall never, ever be forgot.
And that was V for Vendetta. And that's where the anonymous masks came. And today is that day. So I thought I would just let you know that there are people in this world who ultimately have the resources to find the truth about all these other corrupt politicians, corrupt business people, and hold them accountable. Well, wouldn't it be interesting if we, the public, had the courage to dislodge from our comfort and the march on Washington, a people's march to take back democracy? That would be something worth showing up for. But we can't do that. We will have no marches on Washington. There will be individuals who will march in protest. We'll have individual animal rights activists and anti-GMO activists and anti-vaccine activists and anti-nuclear power activists. And there'll be small groups. But as a nation, we are frozen. We're frozen in our pain and in our comfort. We are not suffering yet enough. When someone asked me yesterday on the street, "Gary, when will we stop this madness?" I said, "When enough people suffer." And we don't have enough people suffering yet. But it'll come. Not for a while. It'll come. And then maybe we'll realize how prophetic these statements are. I'm Gary Nall. Your turn. Talk back. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment with your thoughts. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Naughton. You're listening to the number one progressive radio program in the world. You want to get what's going on? You want to be ahead of the curve? You tune in and we'll share it with you because we are out in their face every day. We have no fear against these degenerates. In studio, before we take your call, we have our program director, Jason. Hi, Jason. You want to share something?
Good afternoon, Gary. Hi, Gary. Just want to say hello. Great news. Just going over the numbers, going over seeing how people are joining us on PRN Weekly. And astonishingly, we just did your show. We did all the shows, but we did yours. Three different shows you have on PRN. We have 500,000 a week people downloading your show just a week on your show. That doesn't include all the other shows on PRN, which also generate about 500,000 downloads a week as well. So we have these great amount of people who are no advertisement. This is all word of mouth, people joining the movement, letting people know what's going on there. These downloads, just to let people understand, that's bigger than all five Pacifica stations. That's bigger than many of the big networks like MSNBC, Fox, all those stations that are losing numbers, we're gaining. And this is all word of mouth from these great people who are listening and letting other people know these are real facts out here. We are giving the people what they want. That's just that. Then if you go to YouTube, those are free videos that you put out, free movies, not even videos, free full-length movies. We have over 6 million downloads of free full-length movies, not little clips, movies, which is an amazing, amazing accomplishment. Then if we go on to just our PRN site, where people just go to visit to see our downloads and our articles, we have 231,000 people joining us each week on PRN. Those are great numbers. That's all word of mouth again. I know I'm repeating myself, but that's word of mouth. That's amazing. And then just lastly, the last number, just on Facebook, which you have your Facebook, we have Progressive Radio's Facebook, 244 million people for the last 12 months. 244 million people just giving, sharing, and letting people know what we're doing out here. So thank you to everyone. We really appreciate it, and keep it up.
Good. Well, it's word of mouth. It's the people who care.
Yes, sir.
Remember, there are people who are frozen and being immobile, and there are people who are fluid and flowing, wanting the truth and using it to be healthier, happier, educated, and then changing the systems to make them more honest and ethical. And by the way, we'll be starting something new in the very short future. We're going to start a Progressive News Hour every hour, 24/7. And so I want to thank the 500,000 downloads. That does not include all the people listening live every show. So thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Eric.
Let's say hello to one of our listeners who is calling in right now. Don't know your name. What's your name, please?
I'm Howie from Forest Hills.
Hi, Howie.
I'm glad to speak with you. Americans have a long history of not wanting to face up to problems. And as a result, they go into denial. And that leads to an awful lot of destructive behavior, some of which you cited earlier. Also, I believe there is a very strong effort led by Mr. Gates to radically reduce the world's population. And they are using things like genetically modified foods and vaccines, cell phones, and other radiation-producing devices to try to bring that, and war, of course, to try to bring all that about. I'm not surprised by this behavior, because I am an historian, and this has happened many times in American history.
Okay, well, I appreciate your input. I would suggest this. There is a clip out on the internet of Bill Gates talking about we have too many people in the world and we need to reduce the population of the world. But you also have Ted Turner and other people who believe that we should have less people. Here is the problem. They want to see the people who have the least capacity to fight back being the people who are no longer populating the planet. They started by putting sterilizing hormones and vaccines in Tanzania. And that was discovered by a group of physicians, and that is a matter of historical fact. I could not say and would not say and would feel it would be irresponsible to say that, well, the purpose of genetically engineered foods is to depopulate. It isn't. It's to make a profit. The purpose of war is to make a profit or to gain some geopolitical asset, oil, gas. The consequences of war are depopulation. The consequences of eating unhealthy is to be diseased and direly, but it's not their cause. It's a consequence. We have to separate out those two. Thank you for your call. I appreciate it. And I just need my engineer to let me know who's calling so I know when you call in. You can call in if you have a comment about any of the things mentioned today, about America's not standing up. We stand up in small numbers for small for important causes, but we don't stand up to go off the grid. Do you realize what power we would have if the teachers' union, instead of doing what normally would do and cop out and get its membership to try to elect Hillary Clinton, instead went to Joel Stein, a third-party candidate? That would be the right thing. Of course, the union won't do the right thing. It'll do the political thing. And that's what we have. We have a whole culture of people that once they get to a certain position, then they look at what is in their own best interest and their own survival instead of an advancement, instead of what is the initial and important promises they made. We need third-party candidates. We need people to tear up their credit cards, to stop buying in their stores, stop wearing their clothes, pay attention to a label. If it's made in Bangladesh, don't buy it. If it's made by slave labor, don't buy it. We have to get our kids to understand the power of food to heal, but also to create disease and obesity. The government doesn't come with a militarized unit each day with a bunch of sugar and soda and cake and hold you at gunpoint and say, now you eat this and you make your kid eat that. We have to have a responsibility as human beings for the actions we make. Otherwise, we go into that big void of intentional stupidity where we choose to be stupid, and then when the results go work against us, then we cry that we're a victim. As he said, if you want to see the enemy, look in the mirror. That's the enemy. The others are simply sociopaths that are so self-evident they can't hide the extreme prevalence of their actions. But we empower them. When we go into their armed forces, we empower them. When we work in their companies, we empower them. If we had a general strike, we could close down the country and their power. But unless we're willing to go through that sacrifice, we won't. We'll sacrifice. We'll wake up at 1 in the morning and then stand in line to rush like a herd of cattle into a Walmart, run over someone, kill someone at the door, happened last year, so we could get a flat-screen TV that we can't afford. We have the wrong priorities, and we're aligning and harmonizing with the lower base energies of life. Gino from New York, your turn.
Oh, good day, Brother Gary. Listen, that's quite a scenario on the problem. I think the essence of everything you discussed over these years, the main problem is a spiritual problem, and the solution, of course, is it's a spiritual solution. And however, most people, I don't really believe, especially those in power, the elite, they don't really believe in, it's like, they don't really believe in these things. So in my studying over the years of practical spirituality, there's only one figure I've come across in history that's been so documented. I know I've mentioned this to you before, about a year and a half ago. It's Edgar Cayce. And there's a man, Sidney Kirkpatrick, who wrote a recent biography, 15 years ago, called An American Prophet. Another skeptic, like Tom Segura, who wrote the first biography, who wrote a beautiful book. And I think if you had him on and speak to somebody who had such unbelief in such a subject, because it puts a mirror to these people, like, that one day they're going to pass away and they're going to have to answer for what they've done and what they're doing. And if they don't believe it, they're not going to really look at it. But if they come across a figure who's been so documented, used by Franklin Roosevelt, Woodrow Wilson, Thomas Edison, Nikola Tesla, Houdini couldn't disprove what he said.
Gino, what you're saying is that you believe in reincarnation and that you prove reincarnation by looking at the flies on crap. Those are former politicians and corporate leaders. That's what they come back as. Thank goodness for reincarnation. Thank you, Gino. Appreciate your input. Not quite sure where he was going with Edgar Cayce, but I had a lot of respect for Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet, did a show on him once. Joining me in studio, Lou Ann Panessi. Hi, Lou Ann.
Hello, Gary. I'm excited to share with your audience a project that we're doing, and I'm looking to interview some people. You speak a lot about the importance of homesteading, being able to be sustainable in these changing times. So I am going to be interviewing people for some positions of a homesteading project. Now, I'll be interviewing people. I'm going to give you my number, leave it your name and number, and just say I'm interested in the homesteading. As your whole audience understands, we are looking for people who are harmonizing with exactly what we're doing with this. So not everyone's going to be the right energy, and that's okay. We respect that. So if people are interested in getting involved with the Homestead Project, it will involve travel. It's not in the tri-state area. I want you to give me a call at my home office. That number is 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. I'll be interviewing people all throughout next week.
Good. We promised over a year ago that those who wanted to get off the grid, those who wanted to understand what it was to be self-sufficient and have quality of life, to be with other people, that as this evolved, I would introduce people, and then you could see what it's about. and see if it's something that fits you. It doesn't fit everyone, but I believe that shared communities and off the grid in the future will be probably where 10 to 15 million Americans will be spending a lot of time because they care about life in a different way. So that's what it's about, and it'll begin in January. We're out of time now. I want to thank everyone for listening. I'm going to spend the next hour on our sister station, WBAI in New York, helping them. And also, I'm still interviewing to hire a cook for the weekends who has to, you have to have an experience in cooking, not someone who just wants to cook, but someone who can. And also, I am hiring a research editor, and I'm hiring a person for working and helping people in beauty care and health products. And these pay good, and they're good environments. So anyhow, if you are interested, call 646-926-5422. Have a nice day, everyone.